And with that, we welcome you to the lucky 13th episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of this series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs is Joe Crazy Writer.
I wouldn't say you're charming. I would say you're soft.
The very best at what he does each and every day of his life.
It took a while for that to drop in.
It did. But hey, if it came from the man, it's got to be true.
That's right. So, another week gone by. We're a week away from the convention. It's one of those times when I don't know what we're going to talk about. I'm too depressed.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, you know, well, we might as well just start.
Is it?
Yes.
Sad news?
All kinds of news coming out from Marvel and DC this week. I've got a huge list of canceled books.
Oh, no. That's okay. Hang on. Let me get my pen ready. Go for it.
All right. Over at DC, they've canceled the book Air, which was a Vertigo series.
Okay. Wait, is that the one about the people in the airplane or whatever? Or
yeah.
Airline industry?
Yeah.
Okay. That was a graphic novel one for me. So how many issues did they do?
I think that one ends with... Oh, I don't have it here. I think it ends with issue 24.
Okay, so they still might. I know they did that with, like, Exterminators and a couple other ones. They actually do publish all of the graphic novels, so
yeah.
You'll get the whole thing. So, okay, I can live with that one.
Okay, Unknown Soldier is ending with issue 25. They're soliciting issue 19, but the creator has come out and said that issue 25 will be the last one.
Not reading it.
Okay. Magog, a DC, you know, non-Vertigo book.
Aware of it, but don't care about it.
I picked it up because it was Keith Giffen.
Okay.
And it tied in with JSA, which is a book I really enjoy. And four issues in, I wondered why they were publishing this book. It didn't feel like it was something where, you know, Keith Giffen came in and said, I've got this great idea for this character. It felt more like, oh, okay, we're going to do something with them. Well, here's a story. It's ending with issue 12. And let's remember how Magog was created when Mark Waid put in the script for Kingdom Come. He said to painter Alex Ross, I want Magog to have everything in his costume that we hate about superheroes today.
I can see why I wouldn't want to buy that book.
And DC canceled the entire CMX line.
That I actually heard about, which doesn't surprise me because they canceled, was it Minx last year?
Yes.
Yeah, so I kind of figured that was going. It seems manga's going down almost everywhere. Didn't somebody just declare bankruptcy, didn't they?
Well, Viz fired 40% of their staff.
Okay.
Some of the smaller manga publishers haven't had books in previews for a while. I know Tokyo Pop used to take a page after page after page after page. Now it's two pages. But CMX's cancellation is weird because they're not just canceling. You know, they're not saying, well, you know, we're not going to have any more starting in August. Nope. They're retroactively canceling stuff. Hmm. Basically, a lot of the books that have been solicited just aren't going to come out. DC took down the website, and all references to it earlier this week.
You know, that's a good time to plug. Our website is still up.
Yes, it is. At crazycomics.solitairerose.com, part of the Solitaire Rose family of websites.
And from there, you can also email the show at crazycomics@gmail.com. As far as I know, we have yet to actually get any email, but...
Although I have had some people email me or talk to me at the convention. So a few people have said they want to have a message board. If we get five requests for us to have a message board, we'll do it. And
Comic Geek Speak guy said they'd do it because we're already, what, this episode 13 for us.
Yeah, they said, you know, you just have to last four episodes.
Yeah.
But
yeah, lucky 13, the end of things.
Here's the thing I'm going to let you know. If we get five people saying they want to have the message board, Joe will actually take part.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, I would. I'll go over to your house and make you post.
Oh, all right. Okay, I'll do it.
We got two more cancellations.
Is this DC still?
Nope, we're now over to Marvel.
All right.
Spider-Girl.
Again?
Yep. They said they were doing a four-issue miniseries to see if they could, you know, work out the math and have it be profitable. Because what they're doing, they're reprinting the stuff that they've got in Marvel Digital. Well, it wasn't profitable, so in August they're coming out with Spider-Girl The End.
This is the end, my friend.
The other book that's being canceled for Marvel is Wolverine Weapon X.
It doesn't matter. There's about a dozen Wolverine books, so they're bound to replace it with something.
Yep, it's going to be replaced with Wolverine number one. Now, here's what happened with Weapon X, in my opinion. You had the Wolverine book, and then with Dark Reign, it became Dark Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
You had Wolverine Origins, which was, you know, it was a 50-issue miniseries, basically, that filled in all the gaps and dealt with stories that had to do with Wolverine regaining his memory. Weapon X was supposed to be the main Wolverine book,
mm-hmm.
but it, you know, the first issue didn't sell very well and sales dropped pretty fast. So I think audiences looked at it as, oh, well, that's just another side Wolverine book like Origins. And, nah, I don't care about the Weapon X stuff. I've read enough Weapon X stuff. So they're basically canceling it. Creative team is staying the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll just be Wolverine. So this is the third time they've canceled and started a Wolverine series.
I just, you know, I've ranted about it before and I'll just mini rant, but there's just way too many X titles. You know, it's one thing if you have a neat book like X Factor, which A is written by someone who's, you know, fairly competent, Peter David, but, you know, he has a couple characters, he deals with it, you know, he gets dragged into crossovers, but I look at five X books and all five have all five of the same X-Men in it. I'm like, don't care. You know, it's just too convoluted. I don't know which ones to read, which ones matter. I don't know. I wash my hands of all the X.
I think Marvel's going to run into that because I'm looking through what's coming out in August. And I know it'll make more sense when, you know, you get the magazine that tells you. But they're having all these miniseries that are based on the Marvel Adventures stuff. And they're retellings of old stories. And then the Marvel Adventures books are now, they aren't Marvel Adventures. They're just, you know, the new Marvel Adventures Spider-Man is just Spider-Man. Because I was looking through and I saw, you know, Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet. Or the Avengers and the Infinity Gauntlet. And I thought, wow, they're bringing back the Infinity Gauntlet. And then I looked and I didn't recognize any of the creators. And I looked into it a lot more to find out, oh, this is a retelling of the Infinity Gauntlet using the Marvel Adventures type storytelling, which I have no problem with. I think it's a good idea they're putting out comics for kids. But we've now got, you have the Marvel Adventures line, you have the Ultimate line, you have the main Marvel line. It's starting to get like DC and the multiple Earths.
Yeah, I swear, I looked through that previews catalog, and very little of it's interesting. I just hang on to the things like Captain America and, well, you know, like last week, the new Avengers came out. And right now I'm real skeptical because there's, what, four Avenger titles coming our way?
Yes.
The first one came out. This actually kind of leads into what I've been reading. And I got to admit, I'm kind of impressed because some of the books lately I've been reading, I'm real dubious about until I get to the last page, and then they hook me. Legion of Superheroes did it. Booster Gold did it. Legion of Superheroes starts over with Paul Levitz. Booster Gold's new creative team. And then, of course, what's the Avenger book that came out? Oh, The Avengers came out last week. And it was fun. I mean, you got to that last page and you're like, oh, man. This week, as we record, Secret Avengers comes out. And I don't recall if I put that on my list, but I'll give it a try just to see if it's got that same hook. But
speaking of hooks,
uh-oh.
This here radio show has a sponsor.
And the sponsor would be Galactica, Daughter of Galactus, that I picked up last week. I don't know why. I just...
No. Galactica's not sponsoring this show.
Oh, well, she's kind of hot.
The sponsor of this show would hook us if we didn't mention that this show is brought to you by Worldwide News. That's right, a web strip about the lowest rated cable news network in the world. Well, I don't know. There's probably some in Africa that don't get, you know, don't have a lot of people, but I don't know enough about Africa to write about a cable news channel there because I'm the writer and Dinty Dan Moore is the artist of this wonderful comic strip. By the way, Dan has said that he wants some input into the nicknames he's given because he listened to one of the podcasts and was shocked to find out that he was called Dainty Dan Moore.
He's got to listen to more than just one podcast. Maybe that's after two we'll let him. Maybe he better come here and do something about it.
Yeah, we're calling you out. We're calling you out, Dainty Dan Moore. If you think you've got a better adjective to describe you, come on the show. Uh-oh.
Oh, I would mention if I was doing eBay auctions, my name on eBay is Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, but I'm not doing any, so don't worry about it.
Okay.
Uh-oh. More sad news?
More sad news, everyone. This has been a bad week for me watching TV. Sunday night was the last episode of Lost. 6 years of television ended with a 2.5 hour special. And I'm reading the reaction of people online. And I don't know, maybe all my years of reading Grant Morrison comics have just changed how I look at things. But I watched it and it made perfect sense to me. And I'm reading online. And either people don't understand it, or people are mad because they misunderstand it. And they're, you know, they're saying things that just, I wonder if we watch the same TV show. So, I'm sad that Lost is over. And also, it started in 2001, 24 has ended. Jack Bauer will no longer be torturing people on your TV set Monday nights.
Well, I've got some sad news, too.
Uh-oh. Do we need the music again?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. This is really sad.
It's a triple sad news show. This could be the saddest show ever.
Meanwhile, out on Mars, the Phoenix Mars lander is out of commission.
Oh, no.
Apparently, it's a victim of severe ice damage to its solar panels. It was either not designed to hold up to the Martian winter or ruined by some Martian vandals. We're not sure which.
Oh, what are we going to do?
Well, as long as we're talking about sad stuff, let's just keep going on with that. Let's
make this the most depressing,
the most depressing podcast ever.
Stories ever.
All right, let's. you were talking early about comic series that were canceled. Let's go back, as we want to do, and talk about some comic series that you miss that you feel were canceled too early. And well, I'll start with mine.
Okay.
DC did a series called Amazing Man, which I absolutely loved. I mean, at the core, it was just a silly slice of life story about some guy who put a pot on his head and ran around the neighborhood doing good deeds. And it took place in the DC universe because they referred to superheroes, but they didn't. It would be like you in your neighborhood, you know. you don't talk about Superman every single day unless he's in the news, you know? It was just, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. As you read the story, you got to know the people. You got to discover why this guy could run around with a pot on his head and no one really arrested him. It was a lot of fun. It went 12 issues, a number of one-shots with the original creative team, and it was just fun. And it's probably in a quarter box near you now, so it's worth checking out.
The book was so loved by the people at DC, I remember they did a Frank Miller cover to try and raise sales.
That's what got my attention originally, because that last issue, it was during the Dark Knight craze, and he did a really nice Dark Knight cover with Amazing Man holding onto the cape. And of course, I bought the book and opened it up and realized there's nothing in this about the Dark Knight. Put it aside, and then read it, God knows when, and was just utterly charmed. I ran out, got the other ones, but by then it was too late. The book was canceled. How about you? What you got? What do you miss or that you think was canceled early?
The book that I miss the most is Nexus. And Nexus has kind of been dead for a long time, but the series just recently ended with a four-issue miniseries. Actually, I think it was only three issues because they combined the last two. Nexus was published by First Comics, and it was created by Mike Baron and Steve Rude. And it was a story of a... It was set in the future, and Nexus was created by a mysterious force, you find out later on more about the mysterious force, to execute mass murderers. And very science fiction-y, very cool, very beautifully drawn by Steve Rude. Other artists came on over time. And the problem was, when First Comics went under, there was a rights dispute. First thought that they had the rights, Baron and Rude thought they had the rights. It took like 4 or 5 years for them to sort it all out. And when they got it all sorted out, it ended up at Dark Horse, where they tried to do a series of miniseries.
That's where I picked it up, yeah.
And by then, pretty much the fire was out. Mike Baron's stories weren't as good. Steve Rude's art was still amazing, but it never really caught readers' attention. I know the last miniseries at Dark Horse was actually done in black and white because they couldn't afford to put it out as a color series. Then Steve Rude tried self-publishing it. He published, I think, two issues, and sales were really bad. He did a bunch of comic conventions to try and get people interested in it again. Did the last two issues as a single issue to finish off the story, but sales weren't good enough, and Rude has actually decided he's not going to be doing comic books anymore. He's now just doing paintings. So that's one I missed. And, you know, connected to that was Badger, which was also by Mike Baron. Pretty much the same sort of thing. It, you know, ended when First ended, and then when he got the rights back, he tried to start it at a few other companies, and the audience was just gone. Mm-hmm. So, Joe, do you have any other series that you think were canceled too soon?
I have one that we talked a couple podcasts ago about Next Wave from Marvel.
Yes.
I want to mention that. I don't really want to get into it because we talked at length about why it was canceled. But damn, that was a fun book. But one that always baffles me as to why it's never been successful, the classic Battlestar Galactica. Maybe it's just a fanboy in me, but when I watch those original episodes, there are so many questions left open. And they, you know, I read about where they might have gone in a second season. I read about even the Galactica 1980. I mean, I've sat down with a buddy of mine, Pat, and we've done fan suppositions about where we think it would go. It seemed to me like it never went anywhere. And I know Richard Hatch did a number of hardcover books, and they might have been reprinted in trade paperbacks, where he kind of did like Battlestar Galactica, The Next Generation. Took the fact that everybody aged, there were some kids involved, because obviously such a journey would have to be multi-generational. And those books were fabulous. And I kept thinking, what's Richard doing? Get him to write these books, you know, or adapt them in the comic form, you know. But then, you know, the new Battlestar Galactica came out, which Although I know the ending of it, I haven't seen it much of it because I figured I'd just buy the DVD set when it goes on sale. And, you know, that was just one that, geez, who did it? Marvel did it for a while. I think Rob Liefeld took a crack at it. It's currently at, is it Dynamite or IDW?
Dynamite,
yeah. And they take stabs at it every so often, but it's just not doing anything. I think it's like you said, the party's over, the fans are gone, or they're just unaware that these options are there, you know?
Yeah. The other series I have, and I'm just going to combine them all, to everything Don McGregor did. He had a plan with Killraven. That book got canceled. His Black Panther got canceled in the middle of a story. Mm. And because, you know, Jack Kirby wanted that character. And they said, oh, you know, we'll wrap it up in another book. Well, Don McGregor was let go before. So it was wrapped up by someone else who did not do a very good job, in my opinion. Then there was Saber that he did as an independent book. It was supposed to come back about a couple of years ago through Desperado Press, and it has not resurfaced yet. Mm-hmm. Don McGregor is one of my favorite writers. I could tell tons of stories about Don McGregor. I've met him 3 times, and each time he's one of the most gracious people I've ever met. He loves meeting his fans. If you like his stuff, just come up, talk to him about it. He will talk your ear off.
Cool.
And tell you all sorts of wonderful stories. But for some reason, his comic work doesn't ever seem to come to a... He can never make it to the conclusion. When he came back to Black Panther in the early 90s, he did the run in Marvel Comics Presents. Then he did a 4-issue prestige series that sold really well. And they were going to have him do another 4-issue prestige series that would have wrapped up everything. He had set up Black Panther marrying the female character that he had introduced way back in Jungle Tales. Well, he didn't get along with one of the editors, and they didn't do that book. And then they gave it to Christopher Priest, who went in another direction, and now the Black Panther's married to Storm. So it's
fighting
almost
for his existence in Doom War miniseries right now.
Fighting for his existence in the sales charts.
You know, you're going to be shocked, but I'm going to throw format out the window again.
Oh, no.
And as long as we're talking, let's go into creative teams.
Okay.
What creative teams do you wish would have stayed on a book? And since I said the question, I'm going to start. I love Star Trek. I loved Peter David writing Star Trek. He did the blurb in Star Trek. I mean, if he does a Star Trek book, I am on it, to quote Bart Simpson, like Oprah on a baked ham. I mean, it's just, I'm on it, okay? When he wrote the DC incarnation of Star Trek and the licensing fell, and at the time he had introduced some characters that from the animated series, which back then was a no-no. Nowadays, they're like, yes, it exists. Why? Because we can sell DVDs and make some money on it. Sure, bring the characters in. It's canon. And he went on to do a Baxter series, and it was wonderful. I mean, he took one of my favorite storylines where finally Captain Kirk was called on the carpet about all the Prime Directive violations he did. And they start bringing up different things, like there was the Earth they landed on that was based on like 20th century gangsters. And these guys show up and they burst into the courtroom and they're like, hey, we's here to support Quick. And the Federation guys come up with their guns and go, oh, I see you packing heat. And they pull out their Tommy guns. Well, we's packing heat too, you know. It was just great. And of course, then Kirk's got to explain what he did and why he did it. There were some other ones. you know, tying into the original episode, I mean, Peter David just had a way of grabbing the old stuff and mixing it in, and it wasn't to the point where you had to scratch your head and go, where is he going with this one? He also did sort of an unofficial Lost in Space Star Trek crossover with Bill Mumy. I think Bill actually co-wrote it with him, and the characters were obviously based on Lost in Space without being Lost in Space, and they kind of interacted with each other. Remember that, because I'm going to come back to that Lost in Space. But what creative team do you wish would have stayed on a book?
Well, I'm going to go with the old standby. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby on the Fantastic Four.
Oh.
Now, here's the thing. You know, you might say, well, they did 102 issues. Well, the only reason they quit working together on that book was that Kirby left Marvel. And if you've read the issues that came right after that, you'll see that Stan Lee panicked and was pretty much redoing all the stories he'd done with Kirby. He had John Romita Sr. drawing as much like Kirby as he could. There was everything I've read in the interviews and stuff, there was a real sense of panic when Kirby left. And there was also, well, it's been in the Kirby Collector, so I might as well bring it up. Mm-hmm. Kirby was so mad after what Martin Goodman did to him in 1968 that he decided, I'm not creating any new characters for Marvel at all. Any new characters he created, he put in a folder. And that's the stuff that you see over at DC with the New Gods, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have, you know, I've read that entire run. That's one of the few runs I have all of them in the Marvel Masterworks. If they would have stayed on that book until Kirby could no longer draw, I would have been a very happy man. Love that stuff. You have another one, Joe?
I have a couple, actually. Most of mine are newer during my golden age of comics. I would like to see John Byrne back on Fantastic Four, if he wasn't so angry.
That could be a character on our show, you know, Angry John Byrne.
It was a fun run. You got to, you know, him and Claremont did some fantastic things with the X-Men, but to see John Byrne just run on his own, he still does gorgeous art. He's doing some Star Trek stuff, and I pick it up just to love the artwork. And he packs a lot of story for the $3.99. I think it's worth it. Same guy, Walt Simonson. Oh, back on Thor. Oh, I just love it. He had a feel for the characters. The mythology was good. He mixed it up well with the modern Marvel mythology and the characters. I mean, that Sutor coming to Earth was quite possibly the coolest thing I had ever seen. And I'm always ignorant of is it Norse mythology?
Yes.
Or is based off, I mean, very ignorant of it, but, you know, when he brought these characters in, I was able to figure it out. Of course, now with Wikipedia, I can just Wikipedia and read it up on it. But, you know, back then there was no internet like that. So when he brought Sutor out, I was like, who the heck is this guy? But he kept us up to speed. It was just a lot of fun. One-man teams doing just great stories, great art, of course, with colorists and inkers. But I mean, those are two guys I would just pay him oodles of money and say, go back. You know, they may not have anything to do with the characters, but I just really enjoyed their run, and I would jump on it again if they were to go again.
Well, I've got another run that I would bring up as one that I wish would have lasted longer, mm-hmm. and that's Roger Stern and John Romita Jr. on Spider-Man. Mm. They only did about a year and a half, but in that year, you know, you had the Hobgoblin. You had that Juggernaut story. That's John Romita Jr.'s art I actually liked better back then, which would probably make him angry because most artists, oh, my stuff now is so much better than back then. No, there was something about those two working together. That was a great Spider-Man run, and it was way too short. Another run that Roger Stern was involved in that I wish would have lasted longer, because I think it only lasted like... I'm remembering it only lasted a handful of issues. That was Roger Stern and Paul Smith on Doctor Strange.
I've just read those.
Paul Smith's art. I love Paul Smith's art. I wish he was doing more comics. The last comic he did, I think, was Leave It to Chance.
Mm-hmm.
But his art, you know, he came on, I think the first art I ever saw from him was on the X-Men. And it was very, very different from what had gone before. And I just loved it. And then he was also doing Doctor Strange. And Roger Stern was tying in with all this, you know, all this Marvel history and making Doctor Strange very interesting. More than just, you know, he waves his hands and everything's better. It was more, no, he had specific things that he could do and things he couldn't do so that there was a challenge to it.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked Roger Stern and Marshall Rogers on that book. Mm-hmm. And Marshall Rogers, again, was only on for a short time. And I found an ad, and I wish I would have seen the ad and jogged my memory before, you know, I talked to Jim Shooter.
Mm-hmm.
You know who was supposed to take over after Marshall Rogers on the art, right?
Mm-mm.
Frank Miller.
Ooh.
There was an ad, Roger Stern and Frank Miller, Doctor Strange. And it's just one drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And you just look at it and go, oh, I want that. I want to go to the alternate universe where Frank Miller did Doctor Strange instead of Daredevil.
You get a taste of that in that Amazing Spider-Man annual.
Yes.
Oh. Look at me, I'm drooling already.
By the way, I'm going to throw the format out the window.
Oh, again.
I was closing up, you know, because I looked through to see what all was canceled. And Marvel Comics solicitations, you want to know how, you know, they're running out of stuff to put in omnibuses?
What's the next omnibus?
Women of Marvel collecting Seven Decades Omnibus. Featuring Night Nurse 1 through 4.
Hey, they took that out of my idea.
Beware the Claws of the Cat 1 through 4. Shaun of the She-Devil 1 through 5. The Captain Marvel one-shot from 1989. Millie the Model number 100.
Well, that I can understand.
So if you've been waiting to get your hands on Night Nurse 1 through 4, no, they don't have the inessential Night Nurse. You got to buy it as an omnibus. $125 for 1,160 pages.
I think my head hurts.
Beware the Claws of the Cat 1 through 4 needs to be in this permanent volume. Now, I've read Night Nurse 1 through 4. I read those comics.
You know, I think I did too. I actually own them. I had that thing where if the comic went up in value, I had to buy it here on eBay or somewhere else. And I remember owning them, reading them, and reselling them because they were bad.
Well, what? Night Nurse was a romance comic.
I figured that. Just look at the cover.
And what it was, in 72, Marvel decided we're going to try an outreach program to try and bring in women readers. So they brought in women writers. And Shooter talked about this a little bit. Basically, the women writers they brought in were the girlfriends of people who worked at Marvel.
So I just remember some of the most better written characters in the 70s were written by Chris Claremont. I mean, he wrote Ms. Marvel. That was good. There was some other, somebody made some comments like all the most powerful characters on the X-Men were the women.
Yeah. You
know? So yeah, just get Chris to write it.
Well, he was an assistant editor back then. He wasn't writing anything. He was, this was like 72. He was, and assistant editors were basically just, you know, proofreaders.
Mm-hmm.
Roy Thomas has talked about this in interviews. Stan had this test left over from the 50s that, you know, if he was going to hire you as an editor, well, an assistant editor or an editor, either one. He would give you this test, and you had to find, you know, the spelling errors and the grammatical errors and blah, 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 blah. And if Stan liked you and he knew about you, he'd give you the test. And then Roy, you know, if he liked you, he'd give you the test. And by the middle of the 70s, they were still giving the test, but they weren't even looking at it. They would just, they'd give you the test, and as long as you didn't complain and you didn't ask for too much and they liked you, they'd bring you on as an assistant editor. And then after a while, because the pay as assistant editor was terrible, they'd have you writing stuff. And that's kind of how you broke in as a writer at Marvel.
Nice.
So we've gotten completely off track.
Well, we can go back to creative teams, or we could go on to the third question we got. What comic book companies went away too soon, or do you actually miss?
Well, I've mentioned it already. First Comics.
Mm-hmm.
First was one of the, you know, when I came into that First Comic shop, it was like about 2 or 3 weeks before two first books came out, E-Man and Warp.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't buy Warp, but I bought E-Man. And then, you know, you read a few issues of that. Oh, look, this is coming soon, and this is coming soon, and all these other books. I get John Sable. Let's see, Grimjack. We have a friend of ours who loves Grimjack. Loves Grimjack a lot. Actually has a Grimjack tattoo. And Willie has had that tattoo as long as I've known him. But first, eventually, I just, you know, told my comic shop, if anything First puts out, I buy it. You know, just anything that company puts out. It was all edited by Mike Gold, who, toward the end of First's run, he moved over to DC and was a DC group editor. And again, he was one of the guys. Back then, it was, if Mike Gold edits it, I'm going to buy it. And he brought over a lot of the guys who worked at First. Mike Barron, Tim Truman, Chuck Dixon, Mike Grell came back. And really, the people who were involved in First were also involved in DC in the late 80s and did some of DC's best books. Mike Barron took over The Flash. Tim Truman did Hawkman. Grell did Green Arrow. And there are rumors that that company was just created to sue Marvel as a monopoly. I won't say who I heard the rumors from, but I heard it at one of our conventions as First was closing up shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I have looked all over, both online and in my old fan news magazines, and I haven't found, I've found where they sued. But I've never found where the case ended, so I don't even know if they won or not. If anybody out there knows, please let me know. I'm curious. So, Joe?
I think one of the comic book companies I miss was Innovation Publishing. I'm reading this from Wikipedia because, again, I've got the comics. I'm not going to go dig them up. But it started in 1988, finished around 1994, left a lot of debts to creators, printers, and investors. But when they published, they were probably one of the first companies to do tons of tie-ins with existing media. I mean, they did Anne Rice novels. They did Dark Shadows, the new one, if you guys remember that one. Quantum Leap, Beauty and the Beast, Lost in Space. Again, I talked about that earlier. I'm going to get back to it. They even did Nightmare on Elm Street. They also did their own original series. But what was cool about a lot of their series is that they did a lot of full paintings on them. And they did really spot on adaptations. Nothing's worse than picking up, and I'm going to pick on Star Trek because it's happened a lot. You pick up like a Star Trek comic and you see them say the name Captain Picard and you look at what they did and it does not look anything like Captain Picard. You know, that's a problem when you do something based on an existing person. And what's worse is if you don't have the rights to do that person. In this case, with Innovation, they did have the rights. And some of the Beauty, if you're a Beauty and the Beast fan, dig up these comic books. there was two specials, a couple four specials. You know, I mean, it's all in the price guides. Look it up, find them, give them to your friend who's a Beauty and the Beast fan. They will absolutely love it. I mean, when I had the comic shop going, I had old copies of this. And I don't recall if a new one was published, because by 1993, when we were really going, I think they were starting to die. Because I know there was one they did that they never finished. It was called Lucifer's Hammer, based on a science fiction book. And I was collecting it because I wanted to give it to my dad, because he really liked the book, figuring he would like the comics. I think only two issues or one issue came out. And it all went bye-bye. Not all of it was sad. Lost in Space, Bill Mummy did a Lost in Space comic book. And what he did is he had the characters age, and they went forward. And as they were going, they actually made it to Alpha Centauri, which is where they were going. And if you recall the original Lost in Space episode, Dr. Smith wasn't there willingly. He was there trying to sabotage this mission. And when they get to Alpha Centauri, he makes contact with the things that are trying to destroy the mission. And Bill Mummy basically took that idea, and he only did about, they did 18 issues of the whole thing, but halfway through the storyline, Innovation collapsed. And so that wonderful story was just left open. He, however, was able to finish it, and I don't have the artist. The artist basically lived in South America, so I mean, this was some feat that Bill did, but he was able to publish it in a trade paperback entitled Voyage to the Bottom of the Soul. So you can buy the paperback. I'm not sure if it's in the Diamond system. If not, I bought mine directly from Bill Mummy through his website. So you're able to do that. Again, if you have a friend who really liked Lost in Space, this is one you got to pick up. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I think the coolest, I'm not going to say anything. I got things I want to say about the series, but I don't want to, you know, we don't have our spoiler warning set up, and I'm not going to spoil nothing. What else you got?
Well, talking about the Beauty and the Beast, there were actually two. They were actually just prestige format books, but they were called graphic novels.
Ooh.
Put out from First that were written, I don't think they were drawn by, but I know they were written by Wendy Pini of ElfQuest.
Yes.
Because she was a huge fan of that. And at the time, Beauty and the Beast was, you know, I wouldn't say it was a huge blockbuster, but among science fiction fans, it was a huge hit.
It was kind of a crossover, too, because they had this romance story going that would catch people that wouldn't necessarily watch it for the sci-fi angle.
And one of the reasons they say it probably didn't make it past whatever the last season was is Linda Hamilton left in the middle of the season.
Well, the third season, I admit I did watch it. The third season, it started off with a special admitting that the Beast and Linda Hamilton's character had a child. She died, I don't know if it was in childbirth or because of the villain, kidnapped the child. And that was what kept the third season going.
Well, you know why she left, right?
I didn't hear why she left.
A little obscure movie called Terminator 2.
That was pretty obscure. She should have stuck with Beauty and the Beast. I will admit, though, again, back to Peter David, he put a story in CBG, which I think he reprints on his website or one of his books, where he took Quantum Leap and he jumped into the Beast's body and he had to rectify that situation about the character dying. And he just said it was a story he had to write and get it out of his system. And I read it and I was like, dude, if I had the money, I'd have done it in a heartbeat. It would have just been fantastic.
Another company, well, it kind of fell apart, but I miss it in its glory days, is Kimiko. Kimiko gave us Mage.
Oh, Kimiko, Star Blazers. They did Star Blazers.
They did Mage, Grendel. They did Robotech, which I'd never seen. still to this day have not seen Robotech, but I read all the comics. But they, like a lot of companies, they got big enough that they said, oh, we'll do newsstand distribution. And they found out that newsstand distribution, you print a lot of comics that get returned, and you don't make money on those.
Yeah.
So they started to get in a lot of financial trouble. DC took over their distribution for a short time, and then they went under. But they were a zombie company through most of the 90s. They did the book The Elementals.
Yeah. And
I've always said you could tell when Kimiko would get into financial trouble because Bill Willingham, who at the beginning at least wrote and drew The Elementals, and then he would just write it, and then all of a sudden he would leave in the middle of a story. And it was easy. Oh, they must be having financial trouble because Bill Willingham, hey, you don't pay him, he will not turn in any more work.
You know, as you talk about this, I'm having Comic-Con flashbacks because Kimiko was publishing, I was doing P&J Comics with my partner, Pat. And this was long before we even thought we'd own a comic store. But, I mean, the comics you were talking about, yeah, Elementals. I think, didn't they do an Elemental Justice Machine crossover?
Yes, they did.
And that first Robotech. I mean, these were major buck books, and we had them. You know, so we'd go to a con and we'd set up, and I mean, we'd be selling that first Robotech $20. I think it was Macross Robotech, if I remember.
Yep.
And I mean, that's what got us going. And nowadays, if you can find them, they might be $4 or $5 books. More than likely, you'll find them in a quarter box. Well, it's inflation, 50-cent box. But you know, it's just all these books that were so hot. Didn't they do Fish Police?
Yes, they did.
I already said my Fish Police story. Yeah, that was fun stuff.
Well, and you and I have a story about Kimiko, one of the endless comebacks they did.
Ugh.
We were at the final Capital City sales thingamabob, and you know, there was this feeling of doom permeating the atmosphere. Because
it wasn't from the meals they were feeding us either.
No, it was, well, Marvel had... Marvel's Heroes World thing was collapsing. Diamond had signed DC. And the day of, I think the first day, either the day before or the first day, Diamond announced that they had signed Dark Horse and Image, two exclusive deals.
Mm-hmm.
And they may have signed Marvel as well. But we go there, and this news is out. Go, and basically, everybody who's there kind of knows Cap Cities is done. They don't have DC. They don't have Image. They don't have Dark Horse. They don't have Marvel. Those are the top four publishers, and they can't distribute them.
And if you remember, at that time, Top Cow left Image.
Oh, that's right.
And was being published, was being distributed through Cap City.
Okay.
But... again, I remember doing that because when we did orders, I would give – I felt – I liked Cap City, okay? They took care of us as an early comic store starting out. And I would look at, you know, Diamond. And the nice thing about Cap City is they had a warehouse in St. Paul. I could go pick up my book. So it would be like, okay, we're going to order Top Cow. Okay, put it to Cap City. Put it to – whatever I could order through Cap City, I would. And there were – there were some other exclusives to Cap City, but for the life of me, I can't remember. It'd be like single issue books. I want to say like Joe Linsner, but I don't think that's right.
There were two that I remember because I've got, I do have that issue of the Comics Journal, Viz, and this company that did prints that isn't in existence anymore. Yeah. Those were the two that Cap Cities was able to sign before the end. But we go to this
a podcast in itself, just you know, getting through that year.
But we go to this sales thing in Chicago. And, you know, there are all these publishers set up. Most of them, there were tons and tons of self-publishers because this was kind of the height of the self-publishing boom as well. There was an image booth there that had, I think, one or two people and no product. There was a Dark Horse booth there, and they had one or two people and no product. Mm-hmm. And by the, I think it was either the second or the third day, I asked if I could be a jerk. And Joe said, if it's funny.
I think you went into that show ready to be a jerk. I want to ask Kimiko this.
Yes. So we go up to Kimiko. Now, Kimiko had restarted Elementals at least twice. They had, you know, gone away, then come back and, oh, we're going to wrap up the Oblivion War. And it's going to be great, and it's going to be a six-issue story, and these tie-ins, and blah, 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 blah. And then they went under after, you know, two, three issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had done this at least twice. So I go to the Kimiko booth, and you're tagging along. Were the guys from Twin City Comics with us when I did this?
They might have been.
And I go up, and, you know, they've got the black and white, you know, the photocopies there of the first issues. And I just say, look, as a retailer, why should I tell fans to buy the first issue of this 12-issue maxi series when you've restarted this at least twice and stopped in the middle of the story? How can I tell the people who are buying these books that, yes, you're going to finally get the end of the story? And the poor sales guy, you know, he's just, you know, well, you know, we got new capitalization, blah, blah, blah. Behind him is an artist who's, you know, drawing away as if he's got a chain on his leg and they're not going to let him out till he gets a certain number of pages done. He looks up and he goes, look, man, just buy the stuff. I got to pay rent.
Boy.
But there were, you know, I think the last day you allowed me to be, I went to the continuity booth and they were, you know, doing the Rise of Magic. And I said, are you ever going to finish Death Watch 2000 before you start this new big crossover thing? And the sales guy said, oh yeah, we set out the last, you know, three parts of Death Watch 2000. And behind him, somebody grabbed, kind of tugs on and says, No, we saw him put out the last issue of that storyline yet. It's still not done.
Didn't the art eventually, they reported it was stolen or something?
There was something. I just remember I had bought all, and I even bought the Valeria the She-Bat that you had to send away for with all
I remember that.
Crap, and it was.
That was the big thing. It was supposed to be a Spawn crossover, like the issue three or something. And it wasn't, and they weren't going to refund it, and everybody said, wait a minute, we're not paying for it if it's not what it was supposed to have in it.
Well, I paid for it.
What was the name of it? What was it, Continuity, you said? Or?
Yep, Continuity. And so I got all those, and the last part never came out. So I've got all the, and it was, you know, it crossed into every single one of their books.
Yeah. I've got all of them. They're sitting in my collection waiting to be finished.
It'll never be finished, Joe. It's never going to end.
It might. I got all. Remember they did? They got a Tyvek indestructible cover?
Yeah.
And my employee Dave destroyed it and nailed it to the wall?
Well, Innovation did that too.
Yeah.
With they did a comic book adaptation of the book series The Executioner, which was basically what they ripped off to make The Punisher. If you've ever read an Executioner book, it's you read it and you go, oh, this is The Punisher, except it came out 5 years before that. But, yeah. And the other thing I remember is they had rows and rows and rows of comic boxes because they basically, I guess, they just brought all the inventory that they couldn't sell.
Mm-hmm.
And they were selling it pennies on the dollar. And basically, you would load up. And then you bring it up and they'd, you know, ring it up and everything and just charge it to your account. So you got a bunch of stuff for the store and I got a bunch of stuff for me.
For you.
I still think I have like two boxes of that stuff that I haven't even got to yet.
I'm pretty sure somewhere downstairs I got a box of stuff I've never looked at.
So we didn't just talk about comic companies that have gone away. We've now talked about a distributor that went away.
Yeah, we pretty much covered it all. And of course, as we all know, my store eventually went away. Sad but true.
Seems like everything's going away, Joe.
Yeah. Even British Petroleum's billions going away.
We've only got a couple minutes here, but I want to point out something that, I go through sales numbers. And I haven't done a podcast on it yet because I found out about a month ago that it's a lot more work than I thought, but I will do it. But one thing I want to bring up, that for April, Diamond sold 5,557,000 books. Approximately. If you add up the top 300 comics, that's about what they sold. Mm-hmm. In 2009, for April, they sold 6,733,000 books. That's a drop of one-fifth. A fifth less books. Mm. First thing I'm going to say is I really think the jump in price from $2.99 to $3.99, I think that's the core of it right there. I think people look at $3.99 books, and we'll talk about this more next time, why people would drop books, why people don't go to the shop anymore, why they drop their collections. But, you've said it too, $3.99, that seems to be an upper limit for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And with the economy in the toilet,
say it isn't so,
jacking the price of something that's really disposable income based doesn't seem like a good business model. A fifth of comic book sales evaporated in a year. That reminds me a lot of the 90s, which is kind of what we've been talking about here. So, yep. The most depressing, crazy comics and stories ever. Fitting for episode 13, don't you think, Joe?
Yeah.
And I didn't even ask if you've read Spider-Man yet.
Well, I didn't. Because, I talked about a couple weeks ago, I picked up Shelf Life, Fantastic Stories Celebrating Bookstores, edited by Greg Ketter through his Dreamhaven print, and it's phenomenal. You got to get a copy of this. First of all, he's got them on sale at his store, Dreamhaven. But story after story is about bookstores. And it's not that the story takes place in the bookstore. It's crucial to the story. And first of all, you see Harlan Ellison. His thing pops up. And then, names such as Gene Wolfe, Patrick Weeks, Ramsey Campbell, just fantastic book. I highly recommend it. I'll probably do a Wee Reads on Facebook about it. So if you want to check it out, you can get some more information on it.
You know what book I highly recommend, Joe? I highly recommend you read Amazing Spider-Man.
I just discovered I got a copy of Kingdom Come by Elliot S. Megan.
Oh, for the love of God.
And it's actually, it's got a signed template in it from Mark Waid, Alex Ross, and Elliot, I'm going to have to read this. Not to mention, sitting right next to me is Essential Iron Man, Volume 4. And tomorrow, Dazzler number 1 is out. Woohoo!
Wait, they're putting out a comic about Dazzler again?
Oh, either that or I just found my old issue. I'm going to reread it. And if I may quote John Oliver, these are difficult times. The economy, recession, two wars, and now Haiti. I think it's time we stop letting old people serve in the Senate.
I'm going to quote, these are sad times. Marvel's publishing a Dazzler comic book.
Oh, well.
Well, we've wasted yet another hour of your life talking about funny books. So we just want to remind you that the comic we like the least we still like better than the comic you like the most.